Welcome into the J.P. Shadrick Podcast. Today is May 1st, and here's a look around the Jaguars organization. Draft aftermath is here. A recap of the Jaguars draft weekend is coming up, and we'll get a little more in-depth about the top two picks of the Jaguars draft with Gary Danielson, CBS Sports college football analyst for the SEC on CBS. And it seemed like Alabama or LSU were on CBS pretty much every week the last few seasons. And who better to break down Leonard Fournette and Cam Robinson? And we will continue off the field. We're inside a month from the opening of Daly's Place Amphitheater. And the second part of our conversation with Derek Trucks and Susan Tedeschi is coming up. And we'll talk about the new amphitheater, Jacksonville music history, their new live album, and much, much more in the music business. Tedeschi Trucks Band opens Daly's Place Saturday, May 27th. Let's start off with draft aftermath. The Jags came away with 7 draft picks, and the message seemed pretty clear. Toughness and speed. And if you haven't seen the highlight reel from Leonard Fournette yet, where have you been, first of all? He is as advertised. Big, fast, with the ability to hit a home run at any moment. He's been elevated from a young age, and coaches asking for a birth certificate in youth football. He was the top high school recruit in the country at New Orleans St. Augustine, and he lived up to advanced billing in the SEC with some all-time highlight games in that conference. How does he handle all the hype? Well, here's what he said on a special edition of Jaguars.com Live after his arrival in Jacksonville.
There's always been hype around you, even from when you were about this little, yeah, right? When you were bigger than everybody else.
Most definitely.
They were always checking your birth certificate. Is that a true story?
Yeah, true story.
And then you go to high school. You're the top recruit in the country.
Yeah.
You live up to that hype when you get to LSU. Now, all of a sudden, you're the number 4 pick. How do you live up to this hype?
I mean, to me, I'm not going to say it's hype. I mean, I'm built for this. You know, God put me in this position. You know, he gave me the right mindset. Just to do what I have to do. You know, like I say, man, will really keep me grounded. I say my kids, man, I mean, never forget where I come from, you know, my roots, my foundation, and just be me, through thick and thin.
Alabama tackle Cam Robinson is 6'6", 322 pounds, and we haven't seen that kind of sheer size on the line here in a long time. And he performed well against great pass rushers in the SEC, all reasons why the Jaguars took him early in the second round and traded up for him, in fact. We'll hear more about these guys from CBS Sports college football analyst Gary Danielson coming up. Illinois defensive end DeJuan Smoot was the 3rd-round pick, and he'll work behind Calais Campbell and roll into the defensive line rotation. And while the off-field story is the talk around Oklahoma wide receiver D.D. Westbrook, we'll leave that debate to others. From a pure football sense, the Jags may have gotten a steal in the 4th round. He was a Heisman finalist and the Biletnikoff Award winner a year ago, and he carved up the Big 12 with his speed and catch-and-run ability. Line him up in the slot with the Allens and Marquise, and let's go. The rest of the final day had a decided special teams feel. Linebacker Blair Brown was the pick in round 5. In round 7, the Jags selected Minnesota quarter Jalen Myrick, who ran a 4.28 40 at the combine. And later in the 7th round, a big bruising fullback from Miami, Marquez Williams, at 5'11", 260 pounds. All those players are great, and yes, the organization is happy with their haul, but for the brass, the next step is getting on the field to see what they really have. Executive Vice President of Football Operations Tom Coughlin with a questioning from Hayes Carline of 1010XL Radio.
Free agent class now with Leonard and in this draft class. What's your level of satisfaction with how you've been?
I don't like that word. I never have. That's not a good word. Let's see. Let's get on the field and let's see. Let's work it out. There's more work to be done. Let's be vigilant. Let's find out anywhere we can get a better football player or another football player for our team. Let's stay involved in that.
Do you feel like you've made progress?
Oh, I think we've made progress. But until we go on the field and we get something done, you know, that's what it is. It's progress.
Rookie minicamp is coming up next weekend, the team's first look at the newest players in a football kind of setting. And the Jags on Monday announced the signing of 16 rookie free agents and the release of 11 veteran players to make room for them. We won't go through all the names here. You can check out the full list on Jaguars.com. Let's break down the top two Jaguars picks in the 2017 NFL Draft. Leonard Fournette in the 1st round, Cam Robinson in the 2nd round, and who better to break them down than SEC on CBS Sports analyst Gary Danielson. What's up? How are you, man?
Hey, JP. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. Doing great. We're happy with the draft haul here.
You should be. Nothing. You can't complain about those good football players.
Not at all. And who better to ask than a guy who does Alabama 10 times a year and LSU 5 times a year, right?
Oh, that's for sure.
Let's start off with the top pick then. Leonard Fournette, 4th overall. You know, he had a lot of hype. We've talked about this earlier. A lot of hype in youth football. Lived up to it, was the top recruit in the country in high school out of New Orleans, and lived up to that at LSU, or did he? Did he leave some meat on the bone at LSU, in your opinion?
Well, I guess you could never quite, live up to the buildup that he got. I just think that was a little bit of a victim of what LSU got out of their style of play. They were hampered with their quarterback play. They relied on Leonard maybe a bit too much, but, you know, where Coach Miles' job was at that time, he needed to win almost every game, and it was hard to go away from Leonard in those situations, especially when he was healthy. I really do understand it. You know, I was trying to come across a style of a player that Leonard Fournette reminds me of. And everyone likes to, of course, grab Adrian Peterson, you know, because of the size comparison. But, you know, personally for me, and I think Blake Bortles will be the benefactor, similar to the way I was, he reminds me a lot of the guy I played with, a physical football player back in the day, Billy Sims, when I was with the Lions. He's tough. He's tough to bring on one-on-one, and he's such an advantage for a quarterback to have in the backfield because he makes your play-action pass game that much better. He's physical enough to pick up the blitzes. I know he's not great at it yet, but he will get better at it as it goes along because you have to. And he'll get more excited about doing it. And I think, you know, when we got Billy, we did not think he'd be great catching the ball out of the backfield. But he never was asked to do it that much, and he got better and better every year. So I think he's just going to be helpful not only to your running back position, but obviously to the quarterback position as well.
Gary, there's questions about Leonard's game. You know, he's got the straight-ahead speed and can run over guys, and you know, good luck to the safeties coming up and run support. That's another story. But what about the wiggle? Is there side-to-side? Is there any kind of – does he have that kind of game too?
I think he does, JP, but you know what I felt most of all is he became a little frustrated with the fact that he had to do it all or it wasn't going to work for the team. He felt like teams were loading the box. He's a very bright kid. We've interviewed him personally, you know, 2 or 3 times. And I just think, you know, he started to get frustrated of why a better game plan couldn't get put together. You know, I mean, he'd look at Eddie Lacy and Ingram and the guys with, that had gone down at Alabama, and he considered himself equal at LSU, and he could never put the game plans together to make it easy for him. It always seemed to be hard, and he had to carry the whole team. I thought there was a little bit of frustration there for him, and then he got nicked. And, you know, when you get nicked in your third year as a running back, you have a bunch of questions start, you know, going through your head. So it was a tough year for him last year.
Gary Danielson with us from CBS Sports. And to that point, Alabama, the stats against Alabama for Fournette, well, they're far from exceptional.
Right.
Alabama
right.
would put up 8-9 in the box and let him play a man on the outside because the quarterback and those guys couldn't beat them. And that's how Leonard didn't do that well against Alabama. Take us through that a little bit. In those Alabama games, the stats aren't great. The Heisman race turned in that game in 2015 when Henry went for over 200 and Fournette had only 31 yards.
Well, and, you know, we were there front and center, as you know. You know, we've done that game maybe for the last 9 years. And you could see it all over his face as the game wore on. You know, he was all in for about 3 quarters, and then you could just see him, you know, questioning the game plan in his mind. Not verbally, but just like, Coach, they're all at the line of scrimmage. Our guys cannot block them all. They're playing me to carry the ball. Can't we do something else to move the team and make it easy on everyone? And you're right. I think the frustration of seeing Henry run for those yards and thinking that should be me, I should have that type of blocking, started to build up. And from there, it was just one injury after another. It became frustrating. But, you know, when you look at his, first of all, he's a good kid. You know, second of all, and he's very gifted. He can throw the ball. He's a great athlete. He's obviously as fast as, you know, maybe, you know, one of the top two or three running backs, especially for his size. I just have a, you know, sneaky suspicion that as the game opens up in the NFL, he's going to be he's not going to put up the yards he did in college, obviously, but he's going to be more effective for Jacksonville than he was for LSU in the way they can diversify the game plan around him.
We're not going to see 284 yards from him in the NFL?
No, probably not. Yeah, probably not.
Let's go to Cam Robinson now, the left tackle from Alabama. The Jags traded up a spot to grab him in the second round. He had a game last year against Texas A&M, Miles Garrett right on the other side. You could go through other teams in the SEC. There's some dominant pass rushers that came out, but that one stands out. Why?
Well, you know, first of all, you think you're watching, you know, maybe the best tackle and the best pass rusher in the game, you know. And they both – I just thought they both battled. They both respected each other. I think they both wanted to put something on tape for everybody to watch, and it was as advertised. I think both guys got each other a few times. But I also felt that just like there were questions about, whether – you know, there was the intensity throughout the whole season. I think Cam, he'd get nicked. He'd get a little bit bored if it wasn't a game he was up and ready for. I just think he's a much better athlete than people give him credit for, and I think he's, again, one of those guys that's going to blossom in the NFL. I think he's a great pick. He's a willing run blocker and a gifted pass blocker.
Interesting, because the word that you hear on him is that the run blocking is kind of his game. The other way around, you're saying.
I think he can do both. I just think, with Alabama, the way they threw the ball this year, you didn't get a lot of tape on him. Yeah. You know, I think you got to go all the way back to A.J. McCarron, you know, to the last time they had one of those quarterbacks. Jake Coker a little bit, but Lane Kiffin just did not trust his quarterbacks to really set up a game where he wanted his offensive line to pass protect. It wasn't always just Cam. It was they had problems at right guard the year before. They had problems at right tackle for a couple of years. And I think because of that, you did not see a lot of tape where they would just drop back in the pocket, go five or seven steps, and ask them to do it. So, you know, these tackle positions, I think you got to watch not just game tape. I think you got to watch them in person. It's much like a quarterback. Unless I see a tackle on the field and watch him move his feet and how he practices, whether he plays when he's nicked, I'd have a tough time taking him. But remember, 2 years ago, he played almost a whole season with an injury. And, it's tough to play when you're hurt because you know you're being graded as if you're an All-American type player, but you might be playing at, 75%, and it's not easy to do.
To that point, the Jags brass went up there the week before the draft and did an extra workout with him to see if they liked what they saw. I'm going to go through a list of tackles from Alabama that have gone in the draft recently. Andre Smith, James Carpenter, DJ Fluker, Cyrus Quanjo. How does he compare to those kind of guys?
Well, I think he's a better athlete than any of the other ones. Fluker had a little bit more size and bulk on him. But, one thing we know about these offensive linemen, I mean, they can put on as much weight as they need to, or they can take it off if they need to. I just think he's got better feet than they do. I think he was a little bit more effective on the wide receiver screens getting out in space. Nobody's a perfect football player. I haven't watched as much tape, as anybody. Just my impression watching him is that, in his third year, especially this year with this offense, it was not an offense that Cam Robinson could show his true skills to be drafted as a lead offensive tackle in the top 10 picks like he was hoping.
Gary, what is your offseason like?
Well, I'm never really that far away from football. I try to stay up on it. I'll watch a game tape at least once a week of different teams. In the past, I might have an idea about something I want to kind of check out, and I've been doing that a little bit with Alabama's passing game, where they throw the ball, how they attack the field. I'll come up with different ideas that I like to look at and start developing my ideas for next season almost every day. You know, you just can't really turn it on in August and start to do it. You kind of just always look, read. I probably read a couple hours a day about college football and start to develop my impressions of what we can expect in the coming season.
Don't act like there's not a tea time in there somewhere, Gary.
Oh, well, I was just sticking to football right now. You're right. I'll get my time on the course, but usually we do that early in the morning. You know it. I live in Florida as well. We do it early, we get back early, and then you get in the office a little bit.
Gary, it's good to talk to you, and certainly appreciate you doing it and your insight, and we'll look forward to talking with you again soon, man.
Well, I know this. There's nobody happier with the draft than Blake Bortles. You get a running back and a left tackle, you could not be happier than that if you're a quarterback.
Our thanks to Gary Danielson for his time during his offseason. Really good insight from the best analyst in the college game. Now let's turn our attention away from the field a bit. This podcast was recorded May 1st, which means we're inside a month away from the opening of Daly's Place, the amphitheater outside of Everbank Field. The opening act, Tedeschi Trucks Band, from right here in Jacksonville. And last week you heard part one of a conversation with Susan Tedeschi and Derek Trucks, and we talked about football and their connection with the Jags organization. Today, though, we turn to music. A couple of weeks ago, following our conversation in the stadium, Susan and Derek toured the construction site at Daly's Place, standing on the site where the stage will sit at the end of the month. We then, wearing hard hats and reflective vests, had a conversation about music and what you'll hear May 27th.
Here we are at Daly's Place right behind us. As we shoot this, we're about a month away. You're going to be playing out here in a month. Can you believe it? Pretty cool.
You know, I think it's going to come together. It's looking good in there. The fabric's going up,
right?
Getting a roof.
Yeah.
It's new band uniforms.
Are you going to wear these the first night? If it's not done yet?
Yeah, if it's not done,
right. Yeah, I think you will. Susan, what do you think? How does this compare to, it's going to be about 5,500, 6,000 seats. How does this compare to other venues?
It's great. It looks smaller than it is, you know, but then you get up on it and it really is laid out really nice. I think it's going to be great. I think people are going to have a nice view. I like, you know, Derek was also saying he liked how it was tiered. I think it's really a nice layout. It's going to be really pretty.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be great. I think people are going to be so excited to have a real music venue right next to the stadium. It's going to be awesome.
I know. I'm excited. I get to walk out and hear sound check every day. There's nothing
true.
Wrong with
it's
that.
It's going to be awesome.
At all. So the setup is going to be covered, but the sides are open. So
yeah.
I guess it counts as outdoor. Is there a difference in sound from an outdoor to an indoor venue or both, or have you been in something similar to this before?
I mean, it's a little different. We do, most of our summers are amphitheaters similar to this, where you get some air moving, which is nice. On a nice day, it's good. The theaters are maybe sometimes a little more intimate, but the way this is set up, it feels like it's going to be a nice hybrid. It's, you know, especially on a nice night here, I think it's going to be hard to beat.
Sure, I think so too.
It's great for an audience. I know sitting out front at a show when the temperature's right, you get some air moving, good show, it's hard to beat.
Beautiful. I think it's going to be great.
In the flex field in the background?
As long as there's no sideways rain, you're going to be just fine.
But we get that from time to time around here.
It's true. It's true.
That's how that works. So,
but the breeze will feel good. So.
That's true. You're the first to play in this new arena. Have you ever christened an amphitheater, arena, venue, club before?
No, we've closed a lot of them down, but we've never opened one up, I don't think.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think this is the first.
If we have, we don't remember.
Yeah. No,
this we won't forget. This is a big one.
Yeah. This is the hometown venue.
Exactly.
That's pretty great.
This is really special. A lot of people have been calling and reaching out and emailing us. They're so excited that we're finally playing Jacksonville. So I'm excited, too. I was like, I've been wanting to play, too.
Yeah, I put my brother on the guest list. I was like, I'm not answering my phone for a month. It's all you.
Ringing off the
hook. Yeah, here's a stack of tickets.
Well, I guess the last time you guys played Jacksonville proper was a couple of years ago at Florida Theater, right?
Yeah.
I know you played up the road at Sea Island, last year?
Is that we do this festival in Florida every year, but we haven't made it this far north yet. But, yeah, I'm excited to play here. It's been a long time. I love the theater, too. It's a great spot, but this is going to be a little different trip.
You're coming off a new live album, Live at the Fox in Oakland. Why did you pick that show to make the live album?
I mean, the Fox in Oakland's a beautiful old theater, but most of it's standing room, so it's good energy when people are up and doing their thing. So that was one of the reasons we picked that. We filmed two nights too, so there's a DVD that goes with it. It was a good night. The band was in good spirits. We filmed two shows. First one, everyone was tight because there was cameras around. Everyone's self-conscious. By the second show, everyone forgot that they were there. So we worked it out. we caught a good show finally.
That's awesome. Now, when it comes down to a set list on a given night, changes night to night. Some nights you have some songs you want to get in. How do you guys decide it? Who has the winning vote? Like in the draft room, Tom Coughlin has the final say. Who has the final say?
He's our Tom Coughlin.
That's awesome.
He is. I mean, in the old days, I used to do my own set list because I'm the one singing.
Right.
So I like that. But he does set list, and then he gives it to me, and if I don't want something, then I can be like, no.
She has veto power.
I have veto power. But ultimately, he puts it together.
And I run it by the drummers to make sure that all the time signatures are good, and they, you know, we don't want to do
songs
too many things that
like
are in the same
other
ballpark. Yeah. So they'll make some suggestions. But you know, we if we play a city, I always look at what we played the last time we were there. We try not to repeat too much from night to night too. We get a lot of people that'll follow the band from show to show, so you want to change it up. And we have a lot of creative minds on stage. If you play the same things too many times, they get bored. So some of it's for the band, some of it's for the crowd. But it, you know, we have a running list of. I guess whenever we play a city, I'll get a set list for the last 6 years we played there. And you if there's something you've never played, you try to break it out. If there's something you played too many times, you give it a rest. But, you know, it keeps it interesting for us.
That's great to hear, actually, as a fan that, hey, I'm not going to hear the same thing twice that I heard 3 years ago.
Yeah,
it's actually working to it.
Usually not. You know, and it's good to see the progress. You'll look back at a set list from a few years ago and realize maybe you're not playing any of those and maybe you should break some of them out. Or if you look back and you're playing similar stuff, you're like, we got to get to work. We got to write some songs.
Sure. Right.
We've been slacking playing 200 shows a year.
Do you remember the first concert you guys played together?
I remember the
maybe
first
not
show.
as the Tedeschi Trucks band, but as separate bands. You both had your own bands for a long time.
When we met, it was at the Sanger Theater in New Orleans. Her band was opening for the Allman Brothers. Yeah. So that's when we met.
So that whole summer, I opened for them, and I would get up and sit in and play with them.
Yeah. And then she would come out to shows that my band would play and sit in.
And sit in. And he'd sit
and
in
just
with me sometimes.
Crush the whole audience. It was on to something.
Is there a collaboration you haven't had yet that you'd like to have? Maybe advertise here. Hey, reach out to somebody. Hey, let's come play, record something together. Play an opening night here
Stevie
with you.
Stevie Wonder, come on out.
Yeah. Now we've been really lucky. You know, we've gotten a chance to play with most of our idols, the living ones. You know, we actually got to play with Stevie not too long ago, which was
last April,
pretty,
a year ago.
Pretty surreal.
On a boat in the South China Sea.
Yeah, it's a strange life sometimes that we live. But, you know, I mean, for
really
a long time, B.B. King was the top of my list, but we got to tour with him and have some pretty amazing musical moments with him. People like Herbie Hancock or Wayne Shorter. We had Herbie down to our studio on Julington Creek. It was that was a pretty good day. We had Willie Nelson and Herbie Hancock
pretty good day,
over at Clark's Fish Camp. That's fun.
There's been a lot
pretty
of really
fun.
Wonderful people.
I remember we recorded a song with Herbie at our studio, and my dad and brother came over and cooked a meal for the band, and it was, my dad makes this amazing fried shrimp. Brother made these great grits.
Ah, that's your sister-in-law.
Oh, yeah, it was Erica. You're right.
Get it right, man.
Yeah.
I don't want to shorten her on the grits.
Yeah.
But fast forward 6 months, the record comes out. Herbie's doing his 70th birthday at Carnegie Hall, and he has us up to go do the songs that we recorded with him. And we get done with the show before the encore, and he's standing side stage. He's like, man, I've been thinking about your dad's shrimp and grits all night. I was like, I'm calling him now. I was going to make his year. Doing your show at Carnegie, and you're thinking about Chris Trucks's Julington Creek grits and shrimp. Pretty funny.
There are worse things to think about.
It's a good meal, I would say.
Yeah. Best Jacksonville band of all time, outside of you guys. Go.
I don't even know who actually is from Jacksonville, other than Lynyrd Skynyrd and the Allman Brothers. So I'd say Allman Brothers, because they're originally from Jacksonville.
The Allman Brothers started here.
Yeah. So I'd say Allman Brothers and then Skynyrd, I guess.
No Limp Bizkit in there?
No, they don't rate.
I'm a little older, so that was after my time.
Oh, okay.
I'm older than you two.
Now, there's some amazing artists that have come out of here. I mean, there's an amazing jazz pianist, Marcus Roberts, who is from here. I think he went to school here, too.
Newborn's Calvin Newborn.
Yeah, one of the great guitar players.
He's a great guitar player.
Time.
Yeah, he's very.
He played with everyone
underrated.
From Ray Charles to Sun Ra. Yeah. He's
like, yeah, this guy Elvis Presley came in and took my guitar one night. You know, I was like, what?
We saw Calvin Newborn. He was playing at the airport.
Yeah, he was playing at the airport in Jacksonville,
yeah, really.
Like 10 years ago.
Total genius, though. There's
really
some great
amazing.
Musicians floating around this place.
They really are.
We went by the Clara White Mission not too long ago, and I walked in there, and they have all these headshots of Louis Jordan and like all the great. Black artists from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and I was asking why they were on the wall, and they said that's where they would stay when they would play the Ritz, which was an amazing theater. But there's so much history in this city that people don't really know about. There's been good music here for a long time. Lift Every Voice and Sing was written here. There's some real musical connections.
Guess what? The history continues with you two and your
band. We're trying.
And it continues on Memorial Day weekend. We appreciate your time here in the heat today, and it's, we're looking forward to the concert coming up Memorial Day.
Yeah, man. We're excited for it. Thanks for having us.
The show will be outstanding. Tickets are available through Ticketmaster for all shows at Daly's Place, including Tedeschi Trucks Band, May 27th. Our thanks again to Gary Danielson, SEC on CBS analyst, for his in-depth analysis of Leonard Fournette and Cam Robinson. And a special thanks to Susan Tedeschi and Derek Trucks. As always, a thanks to Jags Manager of Radio, Joe Fortunato, and thanks to you for listening to the J.P. Shadrick Podcast.